Blog Talk Radio.
Man, the thing is. Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought. We are without theme music today, but we're going to move along with the show. I want to welcome everybody to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened. Feed those who are starving and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank Retalk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet, www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and type in We Talk Productions. No, type in blogtalkradio.com, go to We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. Excuse me. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, Meritorious Man You Missing. Okay, so the question is, are contemporary black leaders subscribing or submitting to the Meritorious Man You Missing Act of 1710, some say 1782. Are they the eyes and ears, the gatekeepers of those who continue to seek to oppress, suppress the progress of black people in the good old USA? That's the question for tonight. I want y'all to hold on for a minute because I want to check my host tools. Just hold on for a hot minute, people. But it seems like we're having a... I'm not even sure if you guys can hear me. This is my dash is coming up. And I don't see anybody. If you're listening, call in so I can check. Okay, here it is.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry for the technical difficulty here. I have one of my laptops. Apparently, it's not the dashboard's not working. Let me see. Q, are you here? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, looks like you're coming in from another source. All right, so you still there, Q?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. All right, Joe, I'm sorry about that. We're going to get right back to the show. Just wanted to get my logistics together. As you know, this is a Provocative Thought PT with Carl and Steve. Tonight's our topic is Meritorious Man. You missing. Like Mission Impossible, right? So question is, are our contemporary black leaders subscribing or submitting to the Meritorious Man You Missing Act of 1710 or 1782, I saw a couple of dates with that. Are they there for the eyes and ears, the gatekeepers, you might say, of those who continue to oppress, suppress the progress of black people in the good old U.S. of A. That sounds a little bit like Jesse Jackson. Anyway. From the Webster's Dictionary, right? Meritorious is deserving of honor or esteem, honored for meritorious service to a company, right? So that's an esteem thing you can get. Hey, you know, you did so well, we're going to give you this, right? From study.com, man you missing or formal implementation of from slavery, a way for slaves to earn their freedom. So man you missing is a way for a slave, you know, and it's not just relegated to slavery in America. It's also dealing with slavery historically, right? They had this thing, right? And basically, I guess you put them together as a esteemed way for a slave to gain his freedom. Right, so had a conversation with a friend of mine about this meritorious man you mission. And if this law is still on the books, one would have to wonder what chattel slave is this law referring to, right? So you got to, you know, there are other ways, you know, to be enslaved and indebted to a man. But what law, what would this, if this law is still in effect from 1710 or 1782, you know, one might wonder about the absence of a whistleblower, right, in a system that is said to be infected with oppression, racism, and inequity. Where are the eyes and ears, the champions of the issues that impact specifically, I stress that word specifically, on black people? Where are those champions? History has shown us what happened to some of those champions. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers. We had Brown Brown, Fred Hampton, all murdered. Marcus Garvey sabotaged, right? I think he was deported or something, right? The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense infiltrated by their own people who look just like them. Grandmaster Jay of the NFAC imprisoned for shining a light at a rooftop, right? A rooftop where law enforcement were conducting surveillances, right? Louis Farrakhan, a controversial figure, standing his ground in the Nation of Islam, promoting black collective economics and unity. Then we have Claude Anderson. Now, this is not everybody. I know I missed a whole lot of people. And I'm just, you know, just going over a few people, you know. Claude Anderson, a voice in the wilderness of his own people, foretelling the consequence of the lack of unity and collective black economics while others unite in the race, R-A-C-E, race, and race to power, right? So he used a word to mean both things, like the an actual race, right? And your so-called race, which we know we can debate the whole term about race. Race is really no such thing as race, but we refer to race nowadays. But we know that there's really no such thing as race, right? But he talked about the race to power and how people of the same race need to utilize that their numbers to do better, right? Question is, are there really black folks who can help but won't in order to preserve their individual interests? Black folk who work against black folk to enhance their personal interests or to gain the favor of their master. Now, I mean, some people might say, man, what are you talking about, master? You know. Well, because there's no chattel slavery, right? No, people are not technically, literally owned by people. We're not property, right? But somehow there seems to be, or could be, this mentality continuing from these times of 1710. Are they still masters? Does the Sambo slave mentality, influenced by the meritorious man you missing, still exist? Does that, and we're going to talk about who the Sambo is and things like that, because we, you know, we all, I just learned that we had it all wrong, calling people Uncle Tom and stuff like that. They say the real corporate is Sambo. We're going to get into that and how, you know, black folks might do things that are against black people in their own interests, but against black people. I've heard some black folks say, that the horrors of slavery, bigotry, inequity happened to our ancestors. You know, that happened a long time ago, not to us, to our ancestors. Right? Other folks say blacks need to get over slavery. Slavery is only the beginning of the nightmare. The Civil Rights Act was passed in 1964, right? Which is supposed to have ended segregation in public schools and banned employment discrimination on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. Origin, right? That was about 54 years ago, something like that, right? That's not an exact number. But as we know, I'm sure that has had some impact on some practices. And I'm sure there are some practices it has not had any impact on. Okay, I got a lot of feedback in the back here. Having broken the filibuster, right? The Senate voted 73-27 in favor of the bill, right? Johnson signed it into law on July 2nd, 1964. That means 27 or more than one quarter of the representatives, right, in the Senate opposed the bill. And that was viewed as a victory. To me, a victory in the House is especially for something like giving people full rights of citizenship. That should be, if there's 100 people on the floor, it should be 100 who, you know, would deny a man the full rights of citizenship in the United States. That's ridiculous. But that shows you what kind of animal you up against historically. 1/4 or a little more than 1/4, right? It is 73-27 of the voting representatives on the floor had dissenting opinions, right? A filibuster is a political strategy in which a senator threatens to speak for hours on end to delay efforts to vote for a bill. It can keep a piece of Senate business off the floor indefinitely. So basically, they're trying to BS the time away so that this thing just goes away because we're just going to fight it, you know, until it disappears. The chamber's majority leader can either remove the issue at hand from consideration or file a motion to evoke closure, right? That motion takes 60 votes to succeed, right? So as you see, that was over 60 right there, 73-27. You know, in this case, the filibuster is an action to impede the social, political, economical growth, particularly of black people in the 60s. But if you're trying to impede it in the 60s, right, you are impeding it in the 70s, 80s, 90s. Right, 2000s. Now, if you can't understand that, because if I'm stunting your growth today, if I'm keeping you, use a person. If I stunt your growth at 4 feet, then you will never grow to be 6, because I have things in place to keep you from growing. So. But people who say, hey, that happened in the past, that happened to your ancestors. Well, what happens in the past impacts on the future. And anybody knows that, right? If, you know, the Indians had wiped out any European settler that came to this country, it might be a different story being told about the European expansion in the North American and South American continents, right? If these people were just some vicious murdering type of people. Anybody that came, Europeans, they just wiped them out. We'd be telling a different story. So the past, right, is the foundation for the future. So anybody arguing that it happened to your ancestors and it really hasn't impacted on you because you don't have the same conditions as they do and all that, that's a bunch of BS. That's a person that's not wanting to hear what you have to say, and they don't want to accept responsibility, because also the past is also how the South made the colonists rich. I'm talking wealthy, not rich. Wealthy. Number one producer of cotton. It made the banks in the North. Banks in the North. That's what made them banks. The South. The wealth of the South made the banks what they had were back in that time and what they came to be. It was due to that. So all of that talk about, I'm hearing, you know, that didn't happen to you. It happened to your ancestors. Well, it's been happening legally up until 1964. So, and anybody who thinks that things have just changed, I just told you, like, at least a quarter of the senators didn't even vote for it. So, could, in this case, the filibuster is an action to impede the social, physical, economical growth, particularly of black people. In the 60s, right? Martin Luther King and them, they marching. They want to sit on the front of the bus. They want to go in a restaurant, be served, right? They want to go to the same schools as white folks. You know, because at that time, and still at this time, a lot of good white folks had just received better materials and a response from government in terms of assisting them, right? In the 60s and things like that, before that, and after that. And We'll venture to say, even to this very day, things have improved, but of nowhere where we can say it's equal. So we can't really say that there's no inequity in education, treatment, and things like that. Because we, like I say, you know, I like to say, you cannot legislate a person's heart. You can't do that. So, as long as people feel a certain way, they will, and if they're involved in any of these systems that we are dependent upon, we will need to depend on, you know, their good graces not to discriminate against us. And that's anybody that they may have a reason to discriminate against you, but I'm talking about black folks tonight. So we're not going to go get bent out of shape because I didn't mention other so-called minorities. So, are some of us not lending a helping hand where it counts? You know what I'm saying? Like, are we like giving out turkeys and we'll do that? Well, are we giving out little bikes? Are we doing something to really, where it's really going to help people? You know, are we really helping to nurture, you know, black folks? If we should back. You know, somebody reached back and gave them, throw some, what's that, AR-15s in the community and some Glock 17s, you know. We don't apparently have a shortage of that. But do we have that same kind of effort coming on an educational tip, for instance, like the brother Umar Johnson's trying to get a school, and he has a tight program for what he wants to do for young black boys, how the school is structured and things like that, who will be instructors at his school and things like that. So do we have these people? These people like that character Samuel Jackson played in The Django. I don't know if y'all saw that. It's a movie called The Django. I think it's fictional, but kind of shows you some characters, some very, I don't even know how to describe Samuel Jackson in that, because I could have shot through the screen myself. Sam played that role pretty good. But anyway, it's funny that Samuel Jackson played a Sam. It's weird. Anyway, so are some of us not lending a helping hand where it counts to preserve the personal goals, to preserve their personal goals and improve themselves? where distrust and disunity is fed and or bred into some of the slaves or people with the slave mentality or the mentality of a specific type of slave, should I say, and their descendants. So a specific type of individual will, under the gun of oppression, turn on his own kind to improve his own status in life. So, and that's what, even though this meritorious man you missing is a way that a slave can earn his freedom, right? Is, and in doing so, he does that by gaining the favor of his master. You know what I'm saying? So just remember that as a concept. He does the will of his master in order to gain his freedom, to better his life situation, right? And in doing so, he hurts his people, right? Who happen to be slaves, or in this case, happen to be, today's case, happen to be the descendants of the slaves or the captives in this country, right? What would it look like today, right? So as I said, meritorious means deserving of honor or esteem honor, right? Study.com, man, you missing is a formal emancipation from slavery. It's a way for a slave to earn his freedom. So you got to be thinking like, well, okay, because, you know, we got people saying that that's still a problem today. The Meritorious Manumission Act, legal act of freeing an enslaved African for good deeds as defined by national public policy. Freedom could be granted to an enslaved African who saved the life of a white racist colonial enslaver or his property, invented something from which a white racist colonial enslaver could make profit, or snitched on a fellow enslaved African who was planning a rebellion or running away. So they want to take of everything that you create and take everything that you hope for away from you. So you help them do that and you can gain your freedom, right? Referring to historic papers from the Virginia Assembly, Encyclopedia of Virginia defines the Meritorious Manumission Act as being enacted by the General Assembly in May 1782, right? Don't get confused by the dates or anything like that, because the concept is the most important thing that we're going to be dealing with tonight. The concept of betraying yours to do you, right? In North Carolina, it would allow slave owners, holders, to manumit their slaves at will without government approval. The law also mandates that any manumitting slave, anyone manumitting a slave, shall provide support for those over under a certain age, and that slaves pay the taxes and levies required by the state. That's weird right there. So I'm going to keep going. The act encouraged enslaved Africans to gain their personal freedom by keeping their masters informed on fellow enslaved Africans who were planning and executing revolts and rebellions. So one might say, okay, how does that relate to today? Right? Somebody might say that. Actually, it's not very far-fetched from some of the behaviors of thinking of some people, some of the choices that people make today, just being that selfish. We're going to go on. From African people of love, right? They're saying, during the enslavement period, the Africans in America, the notorious Meritorious Manumission Act was enacted in Virginia, right? So it defined by a national public, as defined by a national public policy, and could be granted to a slave who saved the life of a white master's property, invented something, right? To invent something, right? The master takes control over that and credit for that. You get freedom. In which back then, you can get freedom, all the freedom you want. Somebody could catch you and enslave you again. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, or snitch on a fellow slave who was planning a slave rebellion or to run away. So anybody that's going against, really not against white supremacy, as more as anybody that's trying to do something for a black man or a group of black folks, you snitched on them, you got a good chance of earning your freedom. So if you got you the eyes and ears of the slave master, of the controlling, oppressive, suppressive, white supremacist slave master, right? Basically, right? If you happen to make something, which a lot of black men are responsible for, you make that guy rich, he let you go. Pay your taxes. So he goes on to say, let's assume this, that's where the term selling out came from, right? This meritorious manumission, right? 300 years later, black folks are still dealing with sellouts. But I think we should take a different look at this issue. Selling out is a very negative term, especially among black folks, he said. But for those who sell out, it seems to be very profitable. So people sell out, he says, and it's very profitable. Some of our prominent black spokespersons are very well off financially because they sold out. That's what the writer is saying. They started out as strong black advocates and activists, and now they're nothing more than sycophants for various causes, political parties, businesses, and politicians. That's like a sycophant. That's like a, you just, they're leeches. Whatever the cause is, they jump on it. You know, they're not there for the cause. They there because of the cause, right? So anyway, he said, he's often been told that everyone has a number. Everybody has a price, you know, that they will flip. He's trying to say Huey P. Newton, Malcolm X. He questioned everybody. Mark Garvey, you know, and his, you know, he's just, you know, Martin Luther King. Does he have a price? Well, he, Martin Luther King, as you know, paid a heavy price. And I'm sure that's not the price he wanted to pay, but that's the price he was forced to pay. Michael Evers also. Nobody wants to die. Anyway. He says, some of our leaders are known for selling us out, and we know who they are. Now, that in itself is very interesting because I personally, I think some people just are not looking out for the cookout. I agree with that. But they may have reasons for why they're afraid. Like, they like brushing their hair and back of their head still there. You know what I'm saying? They, maybe some people like that. They like being upright, right? This side of the dirt, as you say. So, you know, so they don't take any chances. I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to throw things out because I don't have anybody in here to speak for those people. Q, did you want to say something? Okay, I'm gonna take that as a no. Q?
Huh?
Did you want to say something? I see your hand is up. So I was, if not, I just, you know.
My hand is up?
I'm just, you know. See if you want to say something. You don't, it's cool.
Okay. Nothing at the time.
Okay. said, then he goes on to talk about what is our role in their action. What's our role in the actions of the leaders, the so-called leaders that we have, that we support? What is, you know, the role of the black community? Are we, he questions if we are enablers or Benedict Arnolds. That's hitting below the belt. Brings to him the second part. Are we buying in a part? Are we buying into someone selling out, right? Some of us, despite knowing who the are like Pavlov's dog, he says, salivating at every word they speak and hoping for a treat or some other reward because we have been so obedient to them. Vote for me and I set you free and, you know, you still slave, right? That type of thing, right? So who's the real corporate, he says, in the sellout game? The one selling out or the one buying in? We will always be sold out if we keep buying into the empty rhetoric and promises of good times to come, right? We will continue to complain about the sellout, but we will also continue to be left out. Verity, they enjoy. Carter, he said, Carter B. Woodson said, Negroes choose their leaders, but unfortunately, they are too often of the wrong kind. So that basically means we pick false leaders, as he's saying, you know, people who are said to be a representative of us, our needs, who are not, will not, do not, cannot, whatever. Just they're not producing anything for us. So we choose a fellow, choose and follow sellouts with zeal. Good talkers, dressed nice, got the suit and tie, you know. They say we should stop blaming them and start blaming ourselves. So if you're going for that sweet talk, like somebody sweet talking you, you know. And you as much as blame for being abused or used as the person who's using you, because why are you going for the sweet talker if you know that's all you're doing, a sweet talker or she? Why are you going for that bag? You know, so they say we usually go with the misleading, do nothing politicians and the ones who are scared to make waves. And I say they scared. Like I said, you know, they shot JFK on national television in broad daylight more than once. Martin got shot in broad daylight. Right? I say they're probably afraid. But I say if you're afraid, you shouldn't be in that position. Why are you there? So if you're afraid, then that means you're there in political office for your own edification. You're not there for the to edify black folk or any folk for all that matter. So, but especially black folks, we put you in there for a reason, to look out for the cookout. Right? And looking out for black folks does not mean doing other folks dirty. That's not what we're talking about here. That's not what Mr. Anderson is expressing. Even though I know a lot of some people fear black energy. So keep going for these docile, non-threatening, scratching and grinning and all but no action, politicians, representations, leaders, or whatever they might be, right? He says, we are the ones suffering because even though we are holding fast and not selling out, we are buying in to sellout mission, right? He says, we must be critical thinkers and let these manumission seekers know that while they may continue to sell out, we will not continue to follow them or to buy in, right? So and that makes a lot of sense to me, you know. You see, that's the one us, brothers and sisters, not them, right? In the article, it says Jim Klingman, founder of the Greater Cincinnati African American Chamber of Commerce, right? So that sounds self-perpetuating, voting and supporting someone who doesn't support you, and even worse, who is working against you? Because you're not working for me, you're working against me. Who looks like you? Could these guys be viewing the world through the eyes of controlling whites? Are they supporting the impedance of black social, political, economic growth? Lanny Starr said, here are 5-9 black leaders who surprisingly don't support reparations, right? Don't support reparations. Reparations of slavery has always been a controversial topic in the black community. It must be a controversial topic among so-called leaders, because I'm pretty sure you go in the hood and mention reparations, the answer going to be, when do we get it? Anyway, the issue has gained momentum recently, with several Caribbean nations renewing their commitment to seek recompense, right? Be compensated, right? From countries that benefited from the atrocities of the transatlantic slave trade. Hey, what are they doing? That happened a long time ago. Not to them, to their ancestors. That's what some I read somebody say. Hey, it happened to your ancestors. They ain't got nothing to do with you. Well, if that's true, why did we have the Constitution? That was written by in 1776. That's the ancestors of the people.
All right, so I'm back. I don't know what happened. You had a blackout here, and there's been some mysterious things going on. Can you hear? You guys who were previously dialed in, you can call back if you can hear me. We can review some of this on another show, since we had so many unfortunate interruptions. Okay, so back to 9 of our leaders, black leaders, right, who surprisingly don't support reparations. We're going to start with Barack Obama. He has been consistently against the idea of reparations, arguing that the government should instead combat the legacy of slavery by improving schools, health care, and the economy for all Americans. Somebody help me with that one, how improving the economy for all Americans is going to specifically deal with the issue of black folks. Somebody help me out with that. He says, I have said in the past, and I repeat again, that the best reparations we can provide are good schools in the inner city and jobs for people who are employed. So, you know, Dr. Anderson is talking about black people being on more self-contained and reliant on themselves. That will help us. So reparations to black folks, and specifically to black folks, to help black folks gain, get schools and things like that, that would be helpful to black folks. Kim? Did you want to talk, Kim? number one, if you want to speak. So we got Obama says we don't need reparations, right? We have a caller. Q, let's see if they get on there. Spinning.
Hello.
Q, you're in? All right, how you doing, Q?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We're in business.
So if you want to add to the show?
Well, I just wasn't aware that President Obama wasn't supportive of reparations for the community. That's news to me.
He says he wants to improve the schools and health care and the economy for all Americans. We're talking about black Americans. Why is he having a conversation about all Americans? That makes no sense to me. Right? Improving the schools, that's all Americans. Health care, that's all Americans. Economy for all, that's all Americans. So he's not even addressing the handicap that black folks have been forced to endure in this country. Condoleezza Rice, another one, says, given the fact that blame to go around for slavery, she says there's plenty to go around to blame for slavery. Plenty of the blame to go around among African and Arab states. Are we talking about the United States or Arab-African states? Because Condoleezza is playing hot potato, throwing it across the ocean. Plenty of blame to go around amongst Western states. I think we're better to look forward. So she wants to look forward, forget the past. So should we tell the Jews they should forget about the past, what happened during World War II? Happened to their ancestors, not them. Should we tell, even if they were there, or well, alive, should we tell them, hey, that's the past. It's not like that anymore. Get over it. You know, basically, it's in the past. If that's the message I'm getting. It's in the past. Altura Davis of Alabama, U.S. House of Representatives, says it's hard to see the space for significant debate on reparations. Instead of focusing on reparations, instead, people must try and find some sort of a unified plan for reviving economic prospects. Don't you need money to do that? Somebody help me out with that, because I'm not understanding why these guys think that black folks don't need money. They have what, less than 0.2% of the wealth. I guess that's a, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps that you don't have because you don't have boots theory. Thomas Sowell, right? He's an economist and a social theorist, right? He said people made worse off by slavery were those who were enslaved. The descendants would have been worse off today if born in Africa instead of America. Put differently, the terrible fate of their ancestors benefited them. If those who were enslaved were alive, they would deserve huge reparations and their captors would deserve worse punishments than our laws allow. Beyond our reach, he said. It's the past, he said. Frustrating as it may be, creating new injustices amongst the living will not change that. We talk about the government. This is the same government that enslaved people. You know what I'm saying? We're not. Nobody's asking to go into some white guy's pocket, right? Because he's white. It's the government that is owed the reparations. I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? Shelby Steele, award-winning author. Shelby Steele is the best-known black opponent of all reparations. Shelby Steele, labeled a neoconservative, Steele said reparations fall into the line behind the fight for welfare programs that only subsidize black inertia. The demand for reparations, he said, is yet another demand for white responsibility when today problem is a failure of black responsibility. So we have, you know, I don't know if people know, but a lot of black towns have been destroyed historically, right? Most famous is Black Wall Street. So I don't understand. Do they know the history or not? I don't understand. A lot of, as I said, of things that black people invented, taken by white folks. You know, so, and if that wasn't true, then they would have a law that says if you invent something and I can make money, I make money off of it, I will free you. There's a chance that I might free you. But who would free a slave that's able to invent things? Anyway, Armstrong Williams, a political commentator. Anybody's not, as you can see, not a leader. The only person in here that I've read that sounds like a leader is Obama. Bill Well, he's an economist. He's a very outspoken on social theories and economy. Armstrong Williams, political commentator, said, by failing to draw a distinction between past and present, a distinction between past and I don't understand that. Because if you go to a therapist, you know what they're going to do? They're going to go to your past. They're going to talk about your past. They're going to go, who are you? You did both parents. How were you disciplined? All this past stuff. And when you, when child, you know, even some in social work, intake process goes into the past, the family generation past. So how you got to where you are is as important as where you are. But I see people expressing or making a distinction between the past and the present, which as we do know, the past and the present are distinct time periods, but they have a very serious connection, because without that past, you have no present, right? So your present is the summation of your past. That's your individual past and the ancestors of other people who have interacted with you and your ancestors. So this past is very, very important. That's why we have this thing called history. Right? Because I need to make up my mind. It can't just, you know, it's important when it comes to knowing the past, but not when it comes to black people getting some money. Now the past is, it's bullshit. You know, you don't need that. The past, that didn't happen to you. You know, we don't need that. So a lot of things we do that's related to the past, singing the Star Spangled Banner, we just had a conversation about that. That came from the past, long today, but it from the past. The Constitution is from the past. So how is that an argument not to give somebody reparations? Anyway, this guy went on to say, I failed to draw distinction between the past and the present. The reparations issue encourages the view that all blacks are victims and that all whites are collectively responsible. Really, I didn't get that. But simply, to regard all members of a group as victims nearly removes such terms as character and personal responsibility from the cultural dialogue. After all, what need is there for individual striving when it is plainly understood that all the difficulties that blacks suffer are the direct, indisputable result of incidents that occurred centuries ago. The real danger with reparations, then, is that it presumes for all members of a fixed group. Remember, 1964, Civil Rights Act was passed because, the abuse didn't stop when Lincoln supposedly freed the slaves. The 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment, that didn't stop. people from discriminating and, you know, doing things to black people. But apparently people want to just say that was the past. And like I said, if that past, Donald Trump, for instance, he's not the father of it. So if his father had not done what he did, Donald Trump would not have the money that he had, you know, and many other people who inherited wealth or riches, things like that. And no matter how rich you might be, just, you know, even myself, I'm living off my father's life and my mother's life. What they did propelled me to be what I am today, where I am today, what I am today. So I owe my successes to my ancestors. But apparently, you can say something like that, but you can't say because of what you've done. The ancestors are not here. So since you're not here, so you don't give, you don't owe anything, because what you've done has impacted on the ancestors that you took the lives of, literally. You took their lives while they were living, and you worked them until they died. So that is a problem. I'm seeing a lot of people saying that's in the past. Now it seems to me that this is Alan Keyes, political activist, former presidential candidate. I'm not really a political person, so I never heard of this guy. But don't be shocked that I never heard of him. He said the issue of slavery was very prominent in the minds of the young men who went into the cannon's mouth during the Civil War. Lots of folks went consciously believing that God called them to give their lives to repair the moral wrong of slavery. It seems to me, what are you talking about? The Civil War was fought because the South wanted to secede from the North, because they really didn't need them, because they had all the wealth through slavery and the business, the cotton business, and, you know, free labor. But here's the guy saying the Civil War was fought because these white guys wanted to give their lives to repair the moral wrong of slavery. You know what? Is that what history book is that in? And whose reality does that exist? Lincoln freed the slaves in the South, not the northern slaves that were in states that were with the Union. He said something like that if he could, he would, you know, maintain slavery. But he said he freed them to break the back of the South, basically, which I don't know how he could do that without a war, which they had to do, because you can't free slaves in a territory you don't control. So, I don't know. You got to read this stuff, y'all. And these people are just saying Joseph C. Phillips, former star of the Cosby Show. I think he played the husband of the oldest Cosby daughter. I never knew he was a leader. I don't know how he got in, I don't know how he's considered a leader. He said reparation advocates argue that this current generation of black people has not shared in the bounty that is America, and that any pathology in the black community is rooted in the legacy of slavery. How a monetary payment will address either wrong is unclear. It does the morality of taking money from people who never owned slaves in order to pay people that were never enslaved. Look, what did reparations become an issue of taking money from white people? The money's coming from the government, which actually black people, believe it or not, happen to pay into that. So what the hell are they talking about? How did it get to be an issue of taking money from white folks instead of the United States government? That's almost like saying that the government is really white folks. Now, which is it? Is it one country Is it a melting pot? What is it? Or is it actually a white man's country? A white man's money? Which is it? Come forward with that, man. If people are thinking about it, excuse me, people appear to be thinking about it as if it's something quite different than what we are told that it is. It's the government, right? The government reparations, not white folk. Nobody's going door to door to white people's houses saying, hey, you got to get some money up because your granddaddy's great-granddaddy enslaved his granddaddy's great-granddaddy. No, that's not the way it goes. But these are black folks saying this, which is really bad. Then we got Ward Connerly, founder of the, and president of the American Civil Rights Institute. Woo! Said, if there is a debt, it was created by another generation, another time and place in our history. And in America, we do not embrace the notion that I am responsible for my father's debt, said Connerly, who helped lead an anti-affirmative action movement in California. Connerly, founder of the president of the American Civil Rights Institute. Floyd Anderson said on YouTube, and I hope I quoted him, not quote, it's just what I got out of what he was saying, repairing the damage done to black folk for all the years of enslavement, Jim Crow, maldistribution of land and resources. American dream was based on free land and free labor. In 1790, immigrants began to get 640 acres of land just coming to this country through land rights, land grants, and Homestead Act. Railroads feed 6 miles of land on each side of the rail track, equals about 1 billion acres of free land. Land is the base of wealth for whites in the USA. Whites control 99% of the wealth in the USA, most found in land. Black people couldn't get 1 acre of free land, he said. So that's the past and how it helped people who are white, right, become wealthy. Right? Wealthy, wealthier, right? And controlling, right? Blacks couldn't get 1 acre of land free. So it was very difficult for black people to get in the race. They were black. They were discriminated against. They were seen as property. They were seen as not a man. People feared them, right? So that's some of the stuff you got to look at. You got some of your own people saying you shouldn't get reparations, which if I'm a person who don't want to give you reparations, I'm a springboard on what your own people say, especially Obama. Analysis, right? They say Dr. Claude Anderson is a black empowerment leader that focused on economic development, currently is head of the Harvard Institute, a black think tank focusing on reparations to descendants of slaves owned by natives. That would be the so-called American Indian, right? His primary goals are to force the government to give monetary reparations to black people that will lead to black people having capital to build black-owned businesses and vertical supply chains, right? Right? That's very important. Lead to black people having capital. That's what Obama and them, like I'm, this, I don't know. Those aren't black people. Those are people who are black. They're not leading black people. Black, and like as Obama said, he was the president of the United States, not the president of black people. So I don't know how somebody consider him as a black leader. He's a leader of the country that's black. And he never, I never heard him being a black leader. If I'm somebody, correct me if I'm wrong. It's the difference between a leader who is black and a leader who is leading black people. Mm-hmm. Or Anderson, I would consider him more of a black leader because he is trying to do something specifically for black people and connect the past with the present. Because we are all the summation of our past. Your present is a summation of your past. You just don't show up. 2022. You're 22 years old. That's 22 years of something occurring. And you're going to really want to look at it 22 years and 9 months. If you were born after 9 months. So it's a lot of things that occur that impacted on what you would develop into being, how you would be able to function, and, you know, all of that. And then you go back to your parents' life. What did they do up to a certain point, right? And how that impacted on you. So we cannot ignore the past. Anybody telling you to ignore your past is basically kind of cut you off from your past. Remember, the slaves were told to forget who they were. Their past was cut off from them. Remember that. That was a way that they controlled the slaves. Now we got black so-called, well, who this author refers to as leaders, telling black folks the past don't count. Don't count for nothing. It didn't happen to you. It happened in the past. So how did they come to that conclusion, or did somebody pay them to say that? Because I'm becoming very suspicious of some of the things that people are saying, especially when they say that the past has nothing to do with your future or your present. We didn't even get to the future of today or right now. But everybody knows the past has a lot to do with it. Read how things develop, how petrochemicals develop. 1776, right? They talk about the Independence Day. That's the past. So why are these so-called brothers and sisters telling us that our past is insignificant and that we don't, suggesting that we don't need capital to build the things that they say that we need? If we need school, give us the money and we'll build our own school. Give us the money, we'll build our own interests. Help us. I say help yourself. Do what you got to do with what you got. But you got to work together. We don't work together, we're going to be here. I'm running out of time. As we know, we had all these amendments, you know, but you can tell there's some white folks in there trying to get some laws passed to get black people, you know, their due rights as citizens in the United States of America, 13th, 14th Amendment. Then we got the Civil Rights Act, you know. Sure. As I said, you can't legislate people's hearts. Right? You can't do that. Guys, with all these laws that they passed, they kept coming up with things to hold black people back. Unions formed to exclude black people. Laws were passed to force companies to hire from the unions. Blacks were then relegated to the ghettos because that was the only place in town blacks could afford to live, right? Because you're not paying them. There's disparities in income, right? The Civil Rights Movement resulted in affirmative action. Dr. Anderson wrote many of the original affirmative action laws as a part of the Carter administration. Since inception, affirmative action has grown to include more people. Dr. Anderson himself, right, the author of the affirmative action, check that on YouTube, say he wrote that for black people. But they took it and included other people who they consider as minorities. Currently, white women get 70% of the affirmative action jobs, and Hispanics get 20% and the affirmative action job. Blacks receive about 1% of the benefit from affirmative action. Dr. Anderson hopes the speedy end of affirmative action. The influx of immigrants has also caused the relative pay between white jobs can be given to immigrants to fill AA quotas, and the disenfranchisement of black will continue, he says. Okay, so affirmative action, which he wrote for black folks, got hijacked. White women. I don't know if y'all was familiar with, or they've been talking about one of these programs that got hijacked. It was the Me Too. Got hijacked by these white women. It was originally not about some of the things, but I'm getting off subject, but affirmative action, 70%. Affirmative action job went to white women. So you go figure. Figure that out. Why is that going on? Anything, sound like it's anything but to help black people rise up. And you got to start questioning black people. Why are you voting for these people? Why are you voting? Who are you voting for? What do they offer you? Forget that party stuff. And because, let me see, it was the Republicans. I think it was the Republican Party. Democrats was the Southern Party. Then that thing switched. So you can't go by the party thing. You can't be loyal to a party. You should cast your vote with someone who's looking out for you, who's going to do something. Remember that, because the election is coming up. So anyway, this writer went on to say Anderson had the two-part solution. First is to infuse black America with wealth through reparations. That makes sense. Now you have money, you can start making money. Money to make money. So where is black people to get all this money from? Where is anybody supposed to get any money from if they don't have money? You might help me out with that. Second is to create black businesses in a vertically integrated supply structure from the bottom up, right? And that's possible. So this has already been done. Claude Anderson is not saying anything that impossible. Anything. This stuff has already been done. We already have successful black panel. I hate to keep going back to Black Wall Street, also Oklahoma. But they lived in an era where they could lynch a black man, the whole town would watch. Nobody go to jail. Make trinkets off of parts of his body. Burn them. Dismember them. Because I think that happened in 1920, 21, 22, something like that, when they went to Tulsa, started burning down their town, killing people, coming out of the house. You know, all over a white lady who said, accused a black man of trying to touch her on an elevator. And they wanted to lynch him, some bugs came on their arm to prevent him from being lynched. And they burnt the whole town down. So the people who were living there, they had more amenities than the people, than the white people in the town next to them. So, I mean, we have the ability to do these things without reparations. I'm not saying we shouldn't get reparations. Bring on that, the fact that we don't or are not getting reparations stop us from doing what we can do for ourselves. It's like sitting in the mud waiting for somebody to pick you up, tripping, and you waiting for somebody to pick you up off the ground and wait. Do. Right, because black people are the only ones that endured slavery. Black people have an exclusive claim to reparations from the federal government. The federal government. The federal government. And just so you know, this country gives aid to many countries. And if you see it, millions, billions of dollars for other countries. So this whole thing about reparations to black people who are 13% of the population didn't even be a problem. They said the first order of business is to secure a reparation process. The Indian Treaty, Trump, even federal law, and most of the treaties explicitly state a portion of the reparations are due to black people that descend tribe slaves. See that? Descend from the tribe slaves. Somebody, somewhere, was looking at this. If those court cases are victorious, a president can set to demand reparations from America as a whole, right? Because As you see, even these black leaders are saying, hey, that's the past, didn't affect you, it affected them, right? And if anybody's arguing about taking money out of the pockets of white folks, that's crazy. Because just take a look at all the aid that the United States gives to the world, people in this country and to people coming into this country and the people around the world. And tell me, why shouldn't they be able to give reparations to black folks, less than 13% or 13% of the population, who ancestors, right, suffered. And slavery is not the end of it, suffering. That's another thing. They hear people saying that, like, yo, this had nothing to do with just slavery. This had something to do with from day one up until right now. And we still having problems. We've been running out of time. So I'm going to close the show just by saying, be very apprehensive about anyone who suggests that black people should not unite socially, economically, and politically. We have evidence of what can happen if black people unite. Dr. Anderson appears to be indicating that issues that impact negatively on black people are not being addressed at the federal level, and black people do not have the numbers to impact on the decision-making process at that level. The federal level can override the decisions shown at the state level, right, or city level, showing you who they truly are. Interests of black, of the black voters can be totally ignored at any level. Black people should start where they have the most power, where they are more than 13% of the population. It makes sense. Nothing beats a failure but to try. Right? It appears that the oppression and suppression continues overtly up until the civil rights era. Overtly means openly, legally, or it's documented, right? This is less than 60 years ago, right? The law may have changed, but not everyone did. And I was trying to say the Uncle Tom, just to get this Uncle Tom thing in, only can't get it in 3 minutes. Uncle Tom was the slave that wouldn't beat the slaves. Sambo was the one that told, beat the slaves to death and did all that crazy. Just so you know, I didn't get time to cover that. I'm going to have to revisit this subject because a lot of stuff I wanted to share with you guys that I didn't get the time to tonight. So I'm rushing, but so I just want to say that we need to work together. And we need to stop listening to anybody that speaks against your unity, no matter how colorful or how they try to say it's old, anything like that. They're not with you. If your person's not with you, that's against you. Anybody's against you, uniting, trying to do better, that's your enemy. All right? So we need to learn how to choose our leaders wisely or representative. I'm not even going to call them leaders. Choose the people you represent wisely, right? We choose and follow sellouts with zeal. So we should stop blaming them and start blaming ourselves. Sellout, buying, and gain is most prevalent in political circles. We need to stop. Unlike other groups that couldn't care less, they care about economics. Blacks are also divided over personalities. And as Carter T. Wilson said, we usually go with the misleading, do-nothing politicians and the ones who are scared to make waves, right? We don't need people who are talking loud, saying nothing, right? And the skitty cats up there, right? We are the ones who are suffering because even though we are holding fast and not selling out, we are buying in to sell out mission. So we might as well be selling out ourselves. That's a quote from, I forget who wrote that. So, until next week, y'all, like, we're going to revisit this. We don't have these same interruptions next week, y'all.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.